Let's begin again on Daf Ches Samud Aleph, the third wide line. By the two dots. Yeah. Vamar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ami Mishmei De'ula. Rabbi Chiya Bar Ami said, in the name of Ula, Godol Hanene Migiyoy Yoyser Mirei Shamayim. A person who enjoys his labor, or the outcome of his labor, is a greater level than Yiras Shamayim. Now, just parenthetically, before we even really learn this statement, we also had earlier Oyev Hashem Shama Mitzionim Ba'alocha Yoyser Mibotei Knesiyus Mibotei Midrashos. The Gemara said before, Hashem likes areas designated for a halacha more than shuls and Batei Medrash. Now we're seeing that a person who enjoys the fruits of his labor is more than a Yerei Shamayim. As a general principle, when the Gemara says that one thing is greater than another thing, that implies that the other thing is very great too, to the extent that there's competition here, that there would be room to wonder. That's just the perspective it's always important to remember. When we say that a place designated for halacha is greater than a shul, it's not to undermine the shul. The shul is as great as you thought it was, or even better, and the place designated for halacha is even higher. So here also, we're not coming to undermine the concept of Yerei Shamayim, but we're coming to say that there's yet a higher level. A person who is nene miyagir, a person who enjoys the fruit of his labor. And we'll, but yeah, you might have thought otherwise. And we'll explain as we go. But first we'll see the Gemara's source for this concept. Regarding Yerei Shamayim, the Pasuk says, Ashrei ish yorei es Hashem. Fortunate is the man who fears Hashem. Dav Chesamud Aleph, the fourth wide line. Chesamud Aleph. V'ilu gabei nene miyigil iksiv, regarding a person who enjoys the results of his labor, the Pasuk says, when you eat, meaning when you enjoy the labor of your hands, ashrecha v'toivlo. It's fortunate for you, and it's good for you. Meaning, ashrecha ba'olam hazeh. What's the double terminology? You're fortunate in this world, and it's good for you. V'toivlo l'olam haba. It's good for you in the next world. V'ilu ligabei yirei shamayim v'toivlo l'iksiv. But regarding the Yerei Shamayim, it doesn't say that second and it's good for you. It just says fortunate. So you see that yes, as fortunate as the Yerei Shamayim is, this person who is enjoying the work of his hands is yet greater. So, as we began discussing last time, this obviously doesn't mean that a person who's like that a Bill Gates is greater than a Yerei Shamayim, a person who enjoys the fruits of his labor. This obviously is talking about something that involves Yiras Shamayim, but takes it to the next level. And therefore we began by citing the Goyin who says that this is all referring to spirituality. And what it means is as follows. A person who enjoys his labor in Avodas Hashem is a greater madrega than a person who simply serves Hashem because of his sphere of heaven. You might wonder, a person might have thought otherwise. So a person does the mitzvahs and he gains great feeling of satisfaction, of fulfillment from performing mitzvahs. Maybe that's not as great as a person who doesn't enjoy it and does it only because he knows that Hashem said you must do it. And the Gemara is saying no. The epitome is for a person to reach a level where he enjoys his service of Hashem. If you are serving Hashem just because you're a God-fearing person in the simple sense, meaning you know you got to do what you got to do, okay, that's the beginning. But you have to aspire for higher. And the truth is, Chachamim tell us, person lo'ilam yasa kodem etorah v'mitzvah shelo lishma, shemitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. You should begin doing mitzvahs for the wrong motives. right? Meaning, honor, money, whatever it is, whatever benefits you might get from it, and then ultimately you reach lishma. Superficially, we understand that to mean you reach a level where you're doing it completely altruistically, with no enjoyment at all. But that's not the pshat. Lishma is a more refined level of enjoyment. You begin by doing it for your own personal pleasures. But then, as you progress in spirituality, and you appreciate the magnitude of what it means, what the privilege to be serving Hashem is, that itself turns into a joy. You're asking, we're told that a person who's commanded, who does mitzvahs that he's commanded to do, is greater than a person who does them voluntarily. And how does that work with our with what we're discussing here? And the answer is that you do have to do the mitzvahs with the realization that you have no other choice. Yet you're supposed to enjoy them. Now the truth is that there's also a deeper level to that. A person who's commanded to do a mitzvah simply is affecting a lot more through his mitzvah than a person who's not commanded. A person who's commanded to do a mitzvah is effecting a lot more through his mitzvah than a person who's not commanded. So, it's also in that sense why it's greater. But whatever the idea is, when we're discussing enjoying Avodas Hashem here, it doesn't necessarily mean that you should feel like you're volunteering. No. A person should realize and serve with the consciousness that he has no choice in the matter. But yet, what we aspire to reach is the realization that this is what we want. Oh, exactly. It's not Yerush Shemayim as opposed to
the kind of comparison that we make. It's really
right.
Yerush Shemayim versus something else.
We're saying the level above Yerush Shemayim, person should get the order right. The level above Yerush Shemayim is reaching a level where you actually enjoy the Avodah Zarah. Just doing it because you fear the consequences. How do you enjoy Avodah Zarah? Enjoying Avodah Zarah means when a person really falls in love with Hashem, when a person really appreciates who Hashem is, when a person really appreciates what it means that Hashem is interested in you serving Him, that itself can turn your Avodas Hashem into a thrilling experience. That's what we're striving for. Okay. That's
it. Seems like the Ashrei is the other element there,
and the other. So you're wondering if the Yerei Shemayim is Elam Hazeh?
I would say it's the reverse, the Torah.
Actually, it's not so. The Maharal says that the Ashrecha certainly includes, when it just says Ashrecha, it includes Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. The difference between the Yirei Shamayim and the person who enjoys his service of Hashem is not that he only gets one and the other one gets both. Just that the Gemara is saying that whereas in the case of the Yirei Shamayim, we fit it all into one Ashrecha, in the case of the person who enjoys the Avodas Hashem, we actually split it into two different departments. The Gemara didn't say, that by the Yerei Shemayim it only says Ashrecha by Olam Hazeh. By the Yerei Shemayim it only says Ashrecha. Everything is included in the Ashrecha. Whereas by the person who enjoys the Avodas Hashem, we actually divide it into two parts and we say, here, it's not just Ashrecha, but there's another aspect also to show us that you actually have both. If anything, the truth is, it's probably the opposite. The Yerei Shamayim doesn't really enjoy his service in this world. The level of a person who reaches enjoying Avodas Hashem is that he has the most fulfilling experience in this world and then goes on to receive the rewards in the next world. By the way, that's something very important to know. There's no such thing, when we're talking about the great people of Jewish history, a suffering tzaddik. Meaning, I don't mean a tzaddik who didn't suffer misfortunes. I mean a person who completely altruistically served Hashem, knowing that this world we're just supposed to suffer the encumbrances of Torah and mitzvahs, and we enjoy the benefits in the next world. The truly great people of Klal Yisrael were people who enjoyed what they were doing. These were people who enjoyed life more than anybody else. When a person reaches the madrega of appreciating what the privilege of serving Hashem is, his life turns into a much more meaningful experience, and that is actually the epitome of gratification that a person can get in this world. It's like we pointed out last week, Hashem ingrained two natures into people, which sometimes we tend to think are two different things. Man, as opposed to animal, can only really gain fulfillment out of hard work. A person who's not working hard, somehow he was born into wealth, never had to lift a finger in his life, is not enjoying a fulfilling feeling in life. It will often be a very, very empty feeling. Humans are structured so that they can only feel fulfilled in life through hard work. A person doesn't have hard work will ultimately start going nuts. He'll start getting himself into trouble, start turning to drugs, drive himself to an early grave. And at the same time, human nature is such that they're always looking for good times. And actually, our sources tell us that yes, man was created for the purpose of working hard. Adam la'amal yulad. Man was created for the purpose of enjoying. Now, these aren't really two separate fields. Sometimes we think it means you work hard in this world, you enjoy the next world. The epitome of maximizing what the human experience in this world is to bring the two together. When you enjoy, you gain your feelings of fulfillment, you gain your olam hazeh, you enjoy your hard work. Now the truth is, this doesn't have to be in Torah. When you see a guy who's a hard-working person, and he enjoys his work, and he enjoys the fulfillment that he brings in, you are seeing a guy who is living the ideal. That's the true Tzuras Ha'adam. He's living the ideal. He represents the true form of what man is meant to be. A man who enjoys his work. Now, of course, why are we imbued with this nature? We know the secret. Because we're supposed to manifest this in our service of Hashem. Where we actually, we work hard and we enjoy it. Now, if it's one or the other, versus either a hard worker without enjoying it, or he's enjoying life without working hard, the hard worker without enjoying it is in better shape. That's for sure. But the greatest level is when you bring the two together. Adam Arishon. Yes. We're not Adam Arishon. And besides, he was meant to work hard too. Just on the contrary, it's exactly the point that we're making here. The Gemara says, Adam lo amal yulot. Man was created to work hard. Eni edea im la'amal peh, im la'amal parnasa. Now, we don't know what does that mean. Does that mean that you're supposed to be working hard, making parnasa? Which, by the way, is a true element of it. Or, is the ideal working hard with your mouth, meaning engaging in Torah learning. The Gemara says, no, that's really the main amal that a person is born for. And Adam was meant to do that too. On the contrary, he was meant to be completely free of needing to work hard for parnasa in order to work very hard solely in that area. He wasn't meant to just sit back and relax. Since he messed up, Hashem said, you know what? It's dangerous for a person to have too much free time on his hand. Have to make sure that he's working hard, that he's forced to work hard. And that's why we can't be loafers. Of the enjoying it. The truth is that this really, you're talking about the subject of developing a relationship with Hashem. That's an agenda we keep coming back to, because that's really what Judaism boils down to. When a person, as a person is developing an awareness, meaning as a person is developing a deeper and deeper awareness of Hashem, a deeper and deeper appreciation of the fact that Hashem is interested in, and a deeper appreciation of the fact of quite who Hashem is, and quite who you aren't, and quite what the contrast between you and Hashem is, and how mind-boggling the fact that Hashem is interested in you interacting with Him. And that's what every mitzvah is. It becomes an unbelievable privilege. Person starts, you give an example, right? If when a person is in the presence of a God Lador, right, and he asks if anybody's got a talis he can borrow, everybody jumps to lend him the talis. That's a very, very tiny, faint mushel of what it means that it's a privilege to do something with somebody. The fact that he's interested in relating to you at all is an unbelievable privilege. When a person lives this way, Avodas Hashem simply turns into a fulfilling experience. That's the going. That's the going on this Gemara. There are a couple of other fundamental approaches to this Gemara. There's also Ramami Pano, there's also the Ikarim. Now, I want to cite each of them with the understanding that, well, these are all very nice ideas, which is the truth. Right? The Gemara said one thing. As far as we're concerned, they're all true. Ramami Pano says that the pshat in this Gemara is, Godel anene mi gia yosem yirei shamayim means something else. This is the Ramami Pano, also the Bnei Yisachar says this. Sorry, Sidur Yishol Shabbos. Also, famous Chassidish work. The Ramami Pano says, Godel anene mi gia yosem yirei shamayim. Yirei shamayim means a person who is spiritually sensitive naturally. Naturally a spiritual person, naturally a conscientious person, naturally a servant of Hashem. And then there's a person who reaches that level through his hard work. So the Gemara is saying you have two people on an equal level. One worked to get there, while to the other it came naturally. The one who had to work to get there is much more valued. He's considered to be on a much greater madrig. That's Nana Miyagia. The stress is on the Yagia. Person, yes, he achieved, but it was through hard work. It's much more valued than the person who, yes, he's also on that level, but with him it was less work. It's the work that counts. Okay. Oh, so Shem wants to know, is there anybody who says the Pashat of Pshat that you give a cup of sinsley means the labor of your physical work?
And then what would be the
chat? So first, yes, there is. But before I present that, I want to say that that's not necessarily the Pashat of Pshat. Meaning, we will give such a Pshat. But we have to realize that, you know, we're automatically tend to associate the words Yigia Kapecho with physical work. So we think that that's probably the natural Pshat. Let's remember that the Gemara says, Nanim Yigiai. In the mind of a person like the Vilna Gaon, Yigia denoted labor in Torah. Right? So, yes, there is such a pshat, but I don't want to necessarily define that as the pashat of pshat. There are a few different pshatim. So, okay, yes, there's the Ikarim. The Ikarim takes this, understands this on a more physical level. Now again, the pshat is never going to be that simply the very fact, the virtue of the fact that you work hard for a panasa makes you greater than your Yishamayim. There's no such thing. Judaism is Judaism, that's not changing. But the Ikarim says as follows. Again, the idea is always based on the understanding that the Gemara says, Godom Yirei Shamayim, it means that he's a Yirei Shamayim plus. We're always talking about a person who's encompassing Yirei Shamayim, but he got to the next level. So the Ikarim says as follows, and this is a very, very interesting idea, because it's a big, I found it to be a very big chiddush. The Ikarim says as follows, you're supposed to do Ishtadlis, right? You're supposed to do physical Ishtadlis in areas of materialism. You're supposed to work for your panasa. Now, is it going to be successful or not? And we leave up to Hashem. You do your ishtadlis, and you leave it up to Hashem. So now, the Gemara says, if a person sees that he's doing his ishtadlis, and you know what? It's all working. It's all working without a catch. His ishtadlis is successful. He can construe that as a sign of divine favor, as a sign of Hashem's favor, and enjoy it. Meaning, he's not just enjoying the fact that he made ends meet at the end of the month, but he's enjoying the fact that everything is going smoothly because he sees in that a sign of Hashem's favor. And he's enjoying that. That's what he's enjoying. He's enjoying this smile of Hashem that he's reading into his successes. God anenemi gia kapa, person who enjoys the fact that he's succeeding. That's a big chiddush, because a person is successful in an ishtadlis, that necessarily means that Hashem is happy with him. You know that the wrong people can also be successful in their ishtadlis. So obviously, you know, the Gemara is talking here about a person who's living conscientiously. He's living conscientiously, and he is spiritually attuned. He's trying to keep on top of what he should be doing and making sure that he's okay. And he knows, yes, I'm putting in my spiritual efforts, and I'm taking the fact that my ishtadlus is successful as a sign that Hashem is happy with me. And I'm enjoying that. I'm basking in Hashem's smile of approval. Yes, the Karim tells us that that's acceptable. It's something of a chiddush. But it's not such a big chiddush. Because even though we know that there certainly is a concept of a person who's granted success, not necessarily because Hashem is happy with him, Chovei Zalvavitz has a very fundamental principle which actually explains this, and it's something to keep in mind. Chovei Zalvavitz says, in general, pious people were nervous when they had big successes, because we know that there's a concept of Hashem paying a person off in this world. So when things went well, they said, why are things going well? Is Hashem trying to pay me off? How can I interpret good things that happen to me? How can I figure out what it's indicating? Is it a sign that I'm in trouble, or is it a sign that Hashem is happy with me? The Chovei Zalvavitz says an amazing thing, very heartening. He says, you know what? The answer is that it's up to you to establish what it is. The intent in the good that you receive depends on how you respond to it. If the good distracts you from service of Hashem, now that you're making a lot more money, you have to be in the office much longer hours, and therefore you cancel your shiurim and your chavrusas, and therefore davening has to be much quicker. Yes, you can understand that this is fortune that's meant to pay you off in this world for anything you might have done good. But if this fortune makes you all the more spiritually attuned, it deepens your sense of gratitude to Hashem, you can assume that on the contrary, it's simply an expression of Hashem's favor for you, and you can enjoy it, and with the realization that not only are you enjoying this good is actually a means of gaining Olam Haba. If you appreciate Hashem's goodness to you, that goodness is a means of more Olam Haba. If a person enjoys, feels closer to Hashem because he feels that Hashem is smiling down on him, that brings him closer to Hashem. That's an end in itself. That earns you Olam Haba. So yes, if you construe your material success as a sign of Hashem's favor, and therefore you feel all the more closer to Hashem, and therefore you dedicate yourself to Hashem a little bit more, and you express your gratitude, it is a sign of Hashem's favor. Okay, just give one last little twist on this, because I think it's an interesting twist. Marsha and the Bnei Yisrael, they both say this. A person who enjoys the fruit of his labor is greater than Yirei Shamayim. What does that mean? A question of halacha comes up. Now we have two people. One person says, I don't know what the halacha is here, I'm going to be machmir. I'm not going to eat it. The other person says, let me sit down, start from the beginning, and really get to the bottom of it. I'm going to clarify it from beginning to end. Sits down, studies the subject from beginning to end, reaches the conclusion that it's permitted, sits down and enjoys it. Who's going to get more schar? The person who refrained because of Yirei Shamayim? Or the person who worked hard, clarified that it's okay, and enjoyed? The Gemara is telling us the person who enjoys the fruit of his labor is greater than the Yirei Shamayim who abstained in order to avoid the labor of clarifying what the halacha is. So that's what we're saying. Living Torah means clarifying the truth and living it. Okay. What's that? That's a different concept. Kayach de'eter, the Rishon is quoting the Gemara, says Kayach de'eter adif, the power of heter is greater. That's talking about chachamim who are issuing psakim. A chacham who has the prowess, the capability to be able to issue a heter on a delicate shayla, is showing a greater level of proficiency than a chacham who's nervous and issues an issel. Now people throw around the term today a little too much. Any question that comes up should be mutter because koyach de'etera adiv. But the Gemara is saying that it's called a koyach. It means that a person has to invest a certain power in order to do it. If you just know, as a rabbi, that the rule is koyach de'etera adiv, what koyach is that expressing? That's just taking an easygoing attitude towards halacha. But When two people are really sincerely trying, putting in the efforts to reach a psak, and one is willing to come out with a psak laheter, he's showing a greater level of halachic proficiency. That's what that concept is. If an individual, is the Gemara here encouraging every individual to try to figure out his own psukim? Yes and no. Meaning, essentially yes. The best thing is for a person to be able, if a person has the capability, to be able to sit down and really begin the sugya from the beginning and analyze it in depth and reach his own halakhic conclusions, that's a great thing. Just it has to be a sincere effort to reach the truth. Part of a sincere effort to reach the truth includes that if you realize that at the end of the day you're going to be limited, and you know that there's somebody else who has a broader perspective, part of your effort is going to have to be taking your conclusions to him and checking it out. But yes, ideally, let's say there are questions. Well, you know, for example, that it's a questionable subject and different places can say different things. You already know that there are comfortable enough grounds to be making. Now you decide, I want to sit down and figure it out for myself. And you really have the capability. I mean, the person who has the know-how to be able to sit down and really analyze the subject and reach your own conclusions, yes, that definitely is greater. But again, that means doing it right. Sometimes, you have magazines. I'm talking about fruit magazines, obviously. And have halakha articles. Take a complex area of halacha. I had such an experience. You'll allow me a little bit to unburden myself. I had an experience writing. I was asked by one of the Frum publications to write an article on a certain very controversial halachic subject. Now, okay, I won't get into all the details. I don't want to give away who it was. I don't mind if people figure it out, because I really don't think that there's anything wrong with giving away who it was, but I still don't want to. It's not what I want to do in this year. But, what? And that's why I don't want to say that, because that might give it away. But I was asked to present one side of a debate on a certain controversial halachic subject. And the people in charge of the newspaper, of that publication, did not want me citing the opinions of contemporary poskim on the matter. Meaning, this was a question that had been debated by the great halachic authorities. Most of the great halachic authorities of our time had ruled X, and there were some who ruled Y, and this publication wanted to present both sides, and they didn't want me saying that Rabbi A, B, C, D, E, F, G had ruled that X. No names. Just present the subject and the conclusion. So I said, what's that supposed to mean? Are you serious that you want to present people with what they need to know on the matter? Of course they need to know who said what. They said, no, 1 minute. They quoted me basically this idea. Reb Shlomo Zalman said, that itself is a sign of ignorance. It's an obvious concept. Reb Shlomo Zalman said that if a person goes through all the subject matter himself and reaches his own conclusions, he can pass it for himself. And therefore, once you're presenting the subject, it's no longer an issue of who said what. Now here, this actually illustrates one of the problems with Frum magazines. Okay, forget about the non-Frum ones. It's okay, in the non-Frum ones you won't have this problem. You'll never have a problem with misleading halachic essays. But where the mentality of this person is, a person's going to sit down after a full Shabbos meal, he's going to spread out on the recliner, he's going to open up a color article with color pictures, right, where a huge subject is encompassed in 3 pages, okay, and there are 2 writers, each one is presenting a different side of the coin. The question is, who's got a better English? And now he has the means, now he has all the information at his fingertips, and this is a person who went through the sugya, and from his perch on the recliner is able to decide what he believes the truth to be. That's not what we mean when we say that yes, it's good for a person to to go through it by himself. Basically, after that experience, I disengaged from so-called Torah material for media. At the end of the day, excuse me for saying this, but there's a yetzer of sensationalism in presenting the hot halachic topics too, and I find myself safe in Art Scroll. There's no sensationalism there. It's good old Gemara the way it's always been for a thousand years. Okay, we move on. You have to be aware, I will have my outbursts every so often. Okay. Vama Abichia Ba'ami Mishmei De'ula. Abichia Ba'ami said in the name of Ula. Different point. La'olam yadur adam b'mkoyim rabbi. A person should always live in his Rebbe's area. Shekolzman Sheshimi Ben Geira Kayim. Who is the Rebbe of Shlomo HaMelech? Rebbe of Shlomo HaMelech was Shimi Ben Geira. He ultimately put him to death, but we're not talking about that right now. But whatever it is, Shlomo's Rebbe was Shimi Ben Geira. As long as Shimi Ben Geira was alive, Loinasa Shlomo is Bas Paro. Shlomo did not marry the daughter of Paro. We know that Shlomo married the daughter of Paro. He had good reason for doing so according to his understanding, which was pretty solid understanding. It wasn't just based on an article that he read. It was based on a very, very deep and broad understanding of Torah. Yet, it went down in history as one of the most severe errors committed by one of the wisest of men, or known as the wisest of men. But we note that this error occurred after Shimi Ben Gera's death. You see that as long as Shimi Ben Gera was alive, Shlomo didn't make this error. What's that? What was Shlomo's svar? Shlomo Bas Parai actually was not the only foreign wife he married. Shlomo married many foreign wives. Shlomo was embarked on a campaign which is really the ultimate purpose of all creation: to spread the true knowledge all around the world. Shlomo believed in his capability to do so, and he believed he had justification to believe in it, and he figured that the best way of doing that is by gaining as many world leaders as he can as mechutanim. And therefore, he married many, many women who he turned into geiruses, figuring that this will then give him influence on many of the nations of the world, which it did. It did. Shlomo had a very, very big impact on the nations of the world at his time, in order to further Hashem's cause in this world. But it backfired. It backfired at a much later point. Backfired at a time. This is what Shlomo is held accountable for. These are the faults of Shlomo HaMelech. When he was an old man, he was married to 1,000 wives. When he was an old man, he was no longer capable on keeping on top of the activities of every last one of his 1,000 wives, or however many was still alive at the time. Let's say it was 800. That's enough. He was no longer capable of keeping on top of all their activities. Some of them reverted to their old practices. This was the first inroad of Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yehuda, in Eretz Yisrael. The Navi terms this in very harsh terms and says Shlomo at that time built an altar for Chemosh, the deity of Moloch. Really what it means is Shlomo did nothing of the sort. Really what it means is that when he was old and infirm, his wives did this behind his back. Some of his wives, we don't know if it's two or three of the 1,000 wives, did this behind his back. And Shlomo was held accountable for not being worried about that all the way at the beginning when he was in his youthful and vigorous years.
It's very likely his money.
What's that? Okay, that's true. That's true. True. What's that? What should he have done? So the way the Navi puts it is, this is very interesting. The Navi actually gives it away, that when the Navi accuses him of building an altar for Chemosh, the god of Moab, it says, and he wasn't as dedicated to Hashem as his father David did. Is that the way to describe an idolater? He's not as great as David HaMelech. That how we would describe the disloyal of today? There are other terms to describe an idolater. So Chazal said, you already see here, the Navi is giving it away, that this is to be understood much more subtly. The blame, the accusation against Shlomo HaMelech is that he didn't quite live up to David's standards. And we're expressing that by saying that he built an altar for Chemosh. What was the difference? The difference was that when David was old and infirm and bedridden, basically out of commission, was after he was no longer running state affairs, when there was suddenly a need to take action in order to ensure that the throne would go to Shlomo, he sprang into action and worked as energetically and vigorously as a young man. Shlomo was not able to do that. Now, the blame was that Shlomo didn't manage to factor this in when he was a young, vigorous, energetic person. He didn't manage to make, and therefore, if he would have factored it in, maybe he would have married a little less wives. That's the big blame against Shlomo HaMelech. And we're attributing it to the fact that his Rebbe was already dead at the time. Had his Rebbe been alive, this mistake wouldn't have happened. Amazing thing. Shlomo HaMelech is the wisest of all men. Yet, he needed his Rebbe's guidance. Ultimately split because of many of the great misfortunes in Klal Yisrael's history developed from that. Yes.
It sounds like a very, very harsh place. It's like that's the punishment for him. I mean, punishment for all the generations.
Well, the ruination of his cause. The point is, it's not just a punishment for the fact that he made that wrong call. The fact that he made that wrong call introduced these inroads that ultimately turned into a tumor that spread. He was blamed for making the wrong call that enabled that to happen. But actually, the subsequent misfortunes that developed were because this Avodah Zarah festered and was cultivated and started spreading.
I understand, like, you thought that this the nation's going to split afterwards? Like,
meaning, as a result of that. As a result of that. It was as a result. It was as a result of Shlomo's wrong call on that subject. Okay. Did he think he was Mashiach? I don't know. It could be that he was hoping to achieve what Mashiach was ultimately meant to achieve, or at least bring the world to as close a state as possible of Mashiach times. So what we're saying here is that this happened after his Rebbe died. Had his Rebbe been alive, it wouldn't have happened.
But it wasn't the first wife he married. He must have married...
Abbas Pari was the first one he married. He married after that another 999. But the problems began after his Rebbe died.
So his Rebbe wouldn't have allowed it? Or he wouldn't have done it from his Rebbe? Or supposed to his Rebbe would have been?
No, it would have been under his Rebbe's influence. His Rebbe wouldn't have let it happen. So the Gemara says, well, Tanya, is that so? So we're telling a person, you should always live in your Rebbe's vicinity, there you're safe? We have a braisa that says, Al Yodur. No, do not live near your Rebbe. Why? It's dangerous to live near your Rebbe. If you live near your Rebbe, you'll be held accountable for all kinds of things. You should have listened to him. Better to live far away, but you didn't know better, and then you're okay. Very strange thing to be saying, right? So the Gemara says like Kasha. It's not a contradiction, it depends. Hadekayifle, hadeloikayifle. If you consider yourself subjugated to your Rebbe, that you feel that you feel bound by whatever he says, by all means, live there. If you do not feel bound by whatever your Rebbe says, you're better off keeping far away. Now let's understand, the Gemara is talking sarcastically. The Gemara doesn't mean to say, well, there are two ways of going about it, two legitimate ways. One form of one track of being a Talmud is not to feel too committed. And then, you know what? Great idea, keep away. That's the good way to go. The other track is, feel committed and then leave nearby. The Gemara is talking sarcastically, and the Gemara is saying, if you don't feel bound by a Rebbe, you're just going to get in trouble by having a Rebbe. So don't live there. Meaning, in other words, the whole point of having a Rebbe is to feel absolutely bound and committed to what he teaches. Then, by living near him, you can ensure that you'll be on a very, very good path. Otherwise, it's a question is whether it's better to remain in the boiling pot or to jump into the fire. So the Gemara says, you'll stay in your Rebbe's vicinity, you'll hear things and you won't listen. So move away. Then, you'll just be on a regular lousy path. You won't be on a completely disastrous path. better lousy than disastrous. But that's the idea, right? Better to be shogeg than mazid. But it's even better to do things right. So that's what the Gemara is saying. He's going to be making mistakes. I mean, that's the point the Gemara is going to be making. That's the point the Gemara is making. I'm sorry? No, not subordinate means he doesn't consider himself subordinate. That's what it means. Not subordinate means that he doesn't subject himself to his Rebbe's authority. I'll hear what he has to say and I'll figure things out for myself. Saying, if so, better not to have a Rebbe. Right. Oh, no. That's not what he's saying. If a person is equal, it's not his Rebbe. We're saying, if you're not willing to subordinate yourself to the Rebbe, I don't know if there's such a verb, if there is. If you're not willing to subordinate yourself to your Rebbe, don't get a Rebbe. Better live your own bumbling life, run into minor problems, don't run into major problems. Okay. Next statement. Omar Rabbi Huneh Bar Yehuda, Omar Rabbi Menachem, Omar Rabbi Yana. Maidik Sib. What's meant by the pasuk that says, Oizvei Hashem Yichu. Those who forsake Hashem will be destroyed, will be finished off. Now that sounds pretty drastic to us. Forsake Hashem. Person drops Torah and mitzvahs. No, listen to this. Zaminyach Sefer Torah v'yotze. It means a person who leaves the presence of a Sefer Torah. In other words, they're in the middle of class of Torah and Shul and you walk out, that is termed as Oizvei Hashem. A person who is forsaking Hashem, who deserves to be destroyed. Strong statement. And that's actually halacha l'maisa. It's considered a very severe avera to leave a shul in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah. Absolutely prohibited, even if it's an emergency. If it's an emergency, you can leave in between aliyahs. Now, I don't mean pikuach nefesh, obviously. I don't mean an emergency on the level of serious illness or something like that. But even if something very important comes up, or right, if you get the kids to school on time, leaving in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah is a very, very severe issue. Termed as the person who forsakes Hashem. Now, Rabbi Avohu Nafik Ben Gavra de Gavra. Yet, Rabbi Avohu would leave between one person and the next, meaning between aliyahs. You need to step out. Person has to go to the bathroom, not in the middle of the kriya, but in between the aliyahs, then you can step out. Boy, Rav Papa. So now Rav Papa is saying psuka. What? What? I don't know if it means on such a level. Probably don't let a person who can hold on for a bit. Boy, Rav Papa. Now Papa is saying psuka le psuka mahu. How about in between psukim? Now today that obviously doesn't mean anything because you can't get out and in between psukim. In earlier times, each pasuk was translated. That was part of the Kriyas HaTorah. They translated each pasuk. So the question is, can I quickly step outside while they're translating? So the Gemara answers, teiku, no answer. So let's sum up what we just saw here. It's very, very usur, very severely prohibited to leave shul in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah. Now this is something we have to, obviously, it has obvious relevance. Person needs to step out of something, absolutely not in the middle of the Kriya. But there's another thing also to note, which is could be relevant. The Pais can say that this means even if you stepped into a shul momentarily, you stepped in to look for something. There in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah, you're not allowed to step out. You have to stay there until the end of the Aliyah. Now, in between aliyahs, you are allowed to step out, but the Pais can qualify this. You're allowed to step out only if there is a serious necessity, and also if you think you'll make it back on time before they start reading again. That's how this is put down, la halacha.
Even though you admit it was a mistake to begin with.
You mean if a person just stepped in from the outside? No, if a person just stepped in from the outside, then he can leave in between the aliyahs. But in between, right? Person just stepped in from the outside, he's not really a part of the minyan. He already heard Kriyas HaTorah. Then you wait for the end of the aliyah, and then you can step out. Then you can leave. But not in the middle of the kriya.
Even though he's already difference is if a person hurts landing already?
Yeah, if a person, if,
oh,
if this is your minion, this is your Kriyas HaTorah, you can only step out between Aliyahs if you'll make it back in time to hear the continuation. But if this is not really your minion, you already heard Kriyas HaTorah, you're going to go daven in some other minion, you're not real, this is not your Kriyas HaTorah. Just, it's considered disrespect to step out while the Kriya is going on. So you wait for the end of the Aliyah.
Kind of qualify is the problem that you won't hear it ever again, or the problem is he's just walking out in the middle of Kriya.
But in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah, the problem is disrespect by walking out in the middle. This has nothing to do
whether
with
heard it or not.
Whether you heard it or not. Walking in between Aliyahs, we're saying, is already a different subject. That's not disrespect. And therefore, if you already heard Kriyas HaTorah, there's no problem to walk out. If you haven't yet heard Kriyas HaTorah, you have to make sure you'll make it back in time.
Why?
So you have to hear Kriyas HaTorah.
But he is in another minion.
Oh, if you're not, that's what he said. If you're another minion, then it's okay. Yeah.
Is there a minion that Kriyas HaTorah is like we're hearing at Shemet Sinai again?
Oh.
And therefore, yeah, we're sort of like walking away from
it. Very good. Very good. The Zohar puts it that way. This is the way the Zohar puts it is like this. I'm going to translate, actually, I have it written here in his Lashon, but I'll read it in English. When the Sefer Torah is brought to the podium, everybody has to set themselves up down here in this world in a state of awe and dread and trembling and quivering and sweating, and you have to concentrate and think of it as though you are now standing at Har Sinai, exactly what you said. You have to view it as though you are now standing at Har Sinai and accepting the Torah. You're hearing the Torah being transmitted by Hashem now. You have to listen with extended ears. And you're not allowed to open your mouth to talk about anything, even Divrei Torah. You have to stand in a state of awe as though you have no mouth. That's the Zohar. And the way the Ramchal puts it, Derech Hashem, the Ramchal says, when you are standing and listening to the Torah being read from the Torah contains the Kedusha. Right? The words of the Sefer Torah contain the Kedusha of the Torah is actually imbued in the Torah. When you're hearing the Torah being read, or that Sefer Torah, it's as though the letters are, whatever this means, being absorbed into you. They're coming off and they're being absorbed into you. You are actually hearing the word of Hashem as though it's being said from Sinai now. And that's why to step out is considered a terrible sacrilege. And that's why, for example, very interesting, the Gemara is, are you allowed to step out in between Pesukim? And the Gemara left the question unanswered. Now for us that doesn't have practical relevance, but there's a point that the Rishonim make that has a lot of practical relevance, just in appreciating the concept. Rabbi Yehuda says, so what's the halacha? You want to step out in between psukim? Rabbi Yehuda says, well, the Gemara left it as a suffix. The Gemara left it unresolved. Suffix de araisa l'chumra. It's a famous concept, and it's a question of Torah law, you have to be machni. Now all the Akronim ask, what do you mean suffix de araisa l'chumra? The whole concept of Kriyas HaTorah is Derabbanan. Kriyas HaTorah is a rabbinic establishment. So how can you say that a question regarding Kriyas HaTorah is suffik d'araisa? Rabbeinu Yehuda says, sorry, not Rabbeinu Yehuda, what?
He says this isn't about
cleaning, this is about covenant. Oh, that's the answer that the Achranim say, you're right. The institution of Kriyas HaTorah itself is Derabbanan. There could have not been Kriyas HaTorah. But once there is a Kriyas HaTorah going on, Kavod Shamayim is at stake. Kavod Shamayim is Daraisa. It's like saying, you might not have a chiyuv to go to your parents, but once you're by your parents and they tell you something, now you have a Daraisa. So yes, this just puts into perspective the severity of the issue of stepping out while Kriyas HaTorah is going on.
What about
Wait, I'm sorry.
Can you catch up during laning at all?
Is a person allowed to catch up davening during laning? Absolutely not. Nothing at all goes on during laning.
In between aliyahs?
In between aliyahs, yes. Now, the truth is, okay, there's more on this subject. We're going to be seeing... Okay, let's continue the next couple of words. The Rosh Hashanah is asking an interesting question that the Achronim discuss. What is the Kriyas HaTorah? How do we understand the chiyuv of Kriyas HaTorah? Is it a chiyuv that every individual has a chiyuv to hear Kriyas HaTorah? Or is it something that's, yeah, it has to be read on a communal basis? The truth is, that appears to be a machlokes rishonim. They seem to be rishonim who understand. This is actually going to be relevant to what we're going to discuss. We're going to begin next year with this. They seem to understand that it's actually a communal chiyuv, meaning it's a chiyuv for the tzibur to read it. But there's no chiyuv on any given individual to actually hear it. Meaning, if you're not in shul, you're not in shul. You don't need to make a point of being there. But this is not the understanding of the Mishnah Berurah, l'halacha l'maaseh. The understanding of the Mishnah Berurah is that it is actually a chiyuv that's incumbent on each individual. It's apparently following those shittos. It's a discussion in the Rishonim. We're going to see more about that next time, Bezus Hashem. Now here, I have a bit of a printout on the subject.
It's what's that? It's like
the Gilas Esther. Not necessarily. You know what? We'll discuss that next time too. Not necessarily. It's a special chiddush by Kriyas HaMegillah that you mamish have to make. If you miss a word, you weren't yet to the whole thing. Not necessarily so by Kriyas HaTorah, but that's a discussion. We'll leave that for next time. Meanwhile, anybody who's interested, the truth is that this printout also touches on next time's discussion. So you'll have a bit of a head start. It's okay.